The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection. Chapter 13, The Action of Equality. Page 721. The distinctions that have already been made will have shown in sufficiency what is meant by the status of equality. It is not mere quiescence and indifference, not a withdrawal from experience, but a superiority to the present reactions of the mind and life. It is the spiritual way of replying to life, or rather of embracing it and compelling it to become a perfect form of action of the self and spirit. It is the first secret of the soul's mastery of existence. When we have it in perfection, we are admitted to the very ground of the divine spiritual nature. The mental being in the body tries to compel and conquer life, but is at every turn compelled by it, because it submits to the desire reactions of the vital self. To be equal, not to be overborne by any stress of desire, is the first condition of real mastery. Self-empire is its basis. But a mere mental equality, however great it may be, is hampered by the tendency of quiescence. It has to preserve itself from desire by self-limitation in the will and action. It is only the spirit which is capable of sublime, undisturbed rapidities of will, as well as an illimitable patience, equally just in a slow and deliberate or a swift and violent, equally secure in a safely lined and limited or a vast and enormous action. It can accept the smallest work in the narrowest circle of cosmos, but it can work too upon the whirl of chaos with an understanding and creative force. And these things it can do, because by its detached and yet intimate acceptance, it carries into both an infinite calm, knowledge, will, and power. It has that detachment because it is above all the happenings, forms, ideas, and movements it embraces in its scope. And it has that intimate acceptance because it is yet one with all things. If we have not this free unity, ekatvam anupasyata, we have not the full equality of the spirit. The first business of the sadhaka is to see whether he has the perfect equality, how far he has gone in this direction, or else where is the flaw, and to exercise steadily his will on his nature, or invite the will of the Purusha to get rid of the defect and its causes. There are four things that he must have. First, equality in the most concrete practical sense of the word, samatha, freedom from mental, vital, physical preferences, and even acceptance of all God's workings within and around him. Secondly, a firm peace, an absence of all disturbance and trouble, shanti. Thirdly, a positive inner spiritual happiness and spiritual ease of the natural being which nothing can lessen, sukham. Fourthly, a clear joy and laughter of the soul, embracing life and existence. To be equal is to be infinite and universal, not to limit oneself, not to bind oneself down to this or that form of the mind and life and its partial preferences and desires. But since man in his present normal nature lives by his mental and vital formations, not in the freedom of his spirit, attachment to them, and the desires and preferences they involve, is also his normal condition. To accept them is at first inevitable. To get beyond them, exceedingly difficult and not perhaps altogether possible, so long as we are compelled to use the mind as the chief instrument of our action. The first necessity, therefore, is to take at least the sting out of them, to deprive them, even when they persist, of their greater insistence, their present egoism, their more violent claim on our nature. The test that we have done this is the presence of an undisturbed calm in the mind and spirit. The sadhaka must be on the watch as the witnessing and willing purusha behind, or better, as soon as he can manage it, above the mind, and repel even the least indices or incident of trouble, anxiety, grief, revolt, disturbance in his mind. If these things come, he must at once detect their source, the defect which they indicate, the fault of egoistic claim, vital desire, emotion, or idea from which they start. And this he must discourage by his will, his spiritualized intelligence, his soul unity with the master of his being. On no account must he admit any excuse for them, however natural, righteous in seeming, or plausible, or any inner or outer justification. If it is the prana which is troubled and clamorous, he must separate himself from the troubled prana, keep seated his higher nature in the buddhi, and by the buddhi school and reject the claim of the desire soul in him. And so too, if it is the heart of emotion that makes the clamor and the disturbance. If, on the other hand, it is the will and intelligence itself that is at fault, then the trouble is more difficult to command, because then his chief aid and instrument becomes an accomplice of the revolt against the divine will. And the old sins of the lower members take advantage of this sanction to raise their diminished heads. Therefore, there must be a constant insistence on one main idea: the self-surrender to the master of our being, God, within us and in the world, the Supreme Self, the Universal Spirit. The buddhi, dwelling always in this master idea, must discourage all its own lesser insistences and preferences, and teach the whole being that the ego, whether it puts forth its claim through the reason, the personal will, the heart, or the desire soul in the prana, has no just claim of any kind, and all grief, revolt, impatience, trouble is a violence against the master of the being. This complete self-surrender must be the chief mainstay of the sadhaka, because it is the only way, apart from complete quiescence and indifference to all action, and that has to be avoided, by which the absolute calm and peace can come. The persistence of trouble, ashanti, the length of time taken for this purification and perfection, itself must not be allowed to become a reason for discouragement and impatience. It comes because there is still something in the nature which responds to it, and the recurrence of trouble serves to bring out the presence of the defect, put the sadhaka upon his guard, and bring about a more enlightened and consistent action of the will to get rid of it. When the trouble is too strong to be kept out, it must be allowed to pass, and its return discouraged by a greater vigilance and insistence of the spiritualized buddhi. thus persisting, it will be found that these things lose their force more and more, become more and more external and brief in their recurrence, until finally calm becomes the law of the being. This rule persists so long as the mental Buddhi is the chief instrument. But when the supermental light takes possession of mind and heart, then there can be no trouble, grief, or disturbance, for that brings with it a spiritual nature of illumined strength, in which these things can have no place. There, the only vibrations and emotions are those which belong to the Anandamaya nature of divine unity. The calm established in the whole being must remain the same, whatever happens, in health and disease, in pleasure and in pain, even in the strongest physical pain, in good fortune and misfortune, our own or that of those we love, in success and failure, honor and insult, praise and blame, justice done to us or injustice. Everything that ordinarily affects the mind. If we see unity everywhere, if we recognize that all comes by the divine will, see God in all, in our enemies, or rather our opponents in the game of life, as well as our friends, in the powers that oppose and resist us, as well as the powers that favor and assist, in all energies and forces and happenings. And if, besides, we can feel that all is undivided from ourself, all the world one with us within our universal being, then this attitude becomes much easier to the heart and mind. But even before we can attain or are firmly seated in that universal vision, we have, by all the means in our power, to insist on this receptive and active equality and calm. Even something of it, alpam api asya dharmasya, is a great step towards perfection. A first firmness in it is the beginning of liberated perfection. Its completeness is the perfect assurance of a rapid progress in all the other members of perfection. For without it, we can have no solid basis. And by the pronounced lack of it, we shall be constantly falling back to the lower status of desire, ego, duality, ignorance. This calm, once attained, vital, and mental preference has lost its disturbing force. It only remains as a formal habit of the mind. Vital acceptance or rejection, the greater readiness to welcome this rather than that happening, the mental acceptance or rejection, the preference of this more congenial or to that other less congenial idea or truth, the dwelling upon the will to this rather than to that other result, become a formal mechanism, still necessary as an index of the direction in which the Shakti is meant to turn, or for the present is made to incline by the master of our being. But it loses its disturbing aspect of strong egoistic will, intolerant desire, obstinate liking. These appearances may remain for a while in a diminished form. But as the calm of equality increases, deepens, becomes more essential and compact, kana, they disappear, cease to color the mental and vital substance, or occur only as touches on the most external physical mind, are unable to penetrate within, and at last even that recurrence that appearance at the outer gates of mind ceases. Then there can come the living reality of the perception that all in us is done and directed by the master of our being. Yatta prayukto smitata karomi, which was before only a strong idea and faith with occasional and derivative glimpses of the divine action behind the becomings of our personal nature. Now, every movement is seen to be the form given by the Shakti, the divine power in us, to the indications of the Purusha, still no doubt personalized, still belittled in the inferior mental form, but not primarily egoistic, an imperfect form, not a positive deformation. We have, then, to get beyond this stage even. For the perfect action and experience is not to be determined by any kind of mental or vital preference, but by the revealing and inspiring spiritual will, which is the Shakti in her direct and real initiation. When I say that as I am appointed, I work, I still bring in a limiting personal element and mental reaction. But it is the master who will do his own work through myself as his instrument. And there must be no mental or other preference in me to limit, to interfere, to be a source of imperfect working. The mind must become a silent, luminous channel for the revelations of the supramental truth and of the will involved in its seeing. Then shall the action be the action of that highest being and truth, and not a qualified translation or mistranslation in the mind. Whatever limitation, selection, relation is imposed, will be self-imposed by the divine on himself, in the individual, at the moment for his own purpose. Not binding, not final, not an ignorant determination of the mind. The thought and will become then an action from a luminous infinite, a formulation not excluding other formulations, but rather putting them into their just place in relation to itself, englobing or transforming them even, and proceeding to larger formations of the divine knowledge and action. The first calm that comes is of the nature of peace, the absence of all unquiet, grief, and disturbance. As the equality becomes more intense, it takes on a fuller substance of positive happiness and spiritual ease. This is the joy of the spirit in itself, dependent on nothing external for its absolute existence. Nirasraya, as the Gita describes it, antasukho antarar ama, an exceeding inner happiness. Brahma jam sparsam atyatam sukham ashnuti. Nothing can disturb it, and it extends itself to the soul's view of outward things. Imposes on them, too, the law of this quiet spiritual joy. For the base of it is still calm. It is an even and tranquil neutral joy. Ahaituka. And as the supramental light grows, a greater ananda comes. The base of the abundant ecstasy of the spirit in all it is, becomes, sees, experiences, and of the laughter of the Shakti, doing luminously the work of the divine, and taking his ananda in all the worlds. The perfected action of equality transforms all the values of things on the basis of all the divine anandamaya power. The outward action may remain what it was or may change, That must be as the Spirit directs, and according to the need of the work to be done for the world. But the whole interaction is of another kind. The Shakti, in its different powers of knowledge, action, enjoyment, creation, formulation, will direct itself to the different aims of existence, but in another spirit. They will be the aims, the fruits, the lines of working laid down by the divine from his light above, not anything claimed by the ego for its own separate sake. The mind, the heart, the vital being, the body itself will be satisfied with whatever comes to them from the dispensation of the master of the being, and in that find a subtlest and yet fullest spiritualized satisfaction and delight. But the divine knowledge and will above will work forward towards its farther ends. Here both success and failure lose their present meanings. There can be no failure, for whatever happens is the intention of the master of the worlds, not final, but a step on his way. And if it appears as an opposition, a defeat, a denial, even for the moment, a total denial of the aim set before the instrumental being, it is so only in appearance. And afterwards, it will appear in its right place, in the economy of his action. A fuller supramental vision may even see at once or beforehand its necessity and its true relation to the eventual result to which it seems so contrary, and even perhaps its definite prohibition. Or if, while the light is deficient, there has been a misinterpretation, whether with regard to the aim or the course of the action, and the steps of the result, the failure comes as a rectification and is calmly accepted without bringing discouragement or a fluctuation of the will. In the end, it is found that there is no such thing as failure, and the soul takes an equal passive or active delight in all happenings as the steps and formulations of the divine will. The same evolution takes place with regard to good fortune and ill fortune, the pleasant and the unpleasant, in every form. Mangala, amangala, priya, apriya. And as with happenings, so with persons, equality brings an entire change of the view and the attitude. The first result of the equal mind and spirit is to bring about an increasing charity, an inner toleration of all persons, ideas, views, actions, because it is seen that God is in all beings, and each acts according to his nature, his svabhava, and its present formulations. When there is the positive equal ananda, this deepens to a sympathetic understanding, and in the end, an equal universal love. None of these things need prevent various relations or different formulations of the inner attitude according to the need of life as determined by the spiritual will, or firm furtherings of this idea, view, action, against that other for the same need and purpose by the same determination, or a strong outward or inward resistance, opposition, and action against the forces that are impelled to stand in the way of the decreed movement. And there may be even the rush of the Rudra energy forcefully working upon or shattering the human or other obstacle, because that is necessary both for him and for the world purpose. But the essence of the equal inmost attitude is not altered or diminished by these more superficial formulations. The spirit, the fundamental soul remain the same. Even while the Shakti of knowledge, will, action, love does its work and assumes the various forms needed for its work. And in the end, all becomes a form of a luminous spiritual unity with all persons, energies, things in the being of God. And in the luminous spiritual one and universal force, in which one's own action becomes an inseparable part of the action of all, is not divided from it, but feels perfectly every relation as a relation with God in all, in the complex terms of His universal oneness. That is a plenitude which can hardly be described in the language of the dividing mental reason, for it uses all its oppositions, yet escapes from them. Nor can it be put in the terms of our limited mental psychology. It belongs to another domain of consciousness, another plane of our being. End of chapter 13, page 728.